And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's The Dirtbag. Glenn Andreessen and his guest Jim Gilbert are here to talk about fruit tree pollination. We'll have a plant of the month, we'll have a new garden stumper, and we'll also discuss what's going on in the honeybee hive this month. Stay tuned for all of that. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2015 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028. Also by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month, 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirtbag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 o'clock, a program dedicated to all things edible and a little bit beyond. Here with me is my guest, Jim Gilbert of One Green World Nursery. Full disclosure, One Green World is an underwriter of this program. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Glenn. Happy spring.
Well, you could have said that last month even, couldn't you?
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Well, what's your expert opinion on how early it is to an average March?
You know,
2 to 3 weeks?
2 to 3 weeks, yeah definitely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Things are, buds are opening, flowers are out there. It's pretty neat. Of course, those of us that think about fruit, we worry a little bit about late frost, but let's enjoy it, you know, let's go with it.
I can't remember what year it was, 2011? Maybe we didn't have our first 60-degree day until March 30th.
Really?
So it's just averaging out from that one.
That's right. Well, I think it was 70. It was amazingly warm. I was out in shorts and short-sleeve shirt and just having a great time.
Bees are flying.
Yep. Bumblebees having a good time, too.
Right? Yep. I've seen mud dauber-type wasps and yellow jackets. Those are queens that are out looking for a place to nest. So,
looking for a king?
Well, they might be, but there isn't such a thing. One time in my music selection here, I think I'm going to have... there's this old standard classic, I'm a King Bee. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd have different versions of that to play throughout the...
I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of announcements. I've got one announcement here, and you've got an announcement there, too. This was sent in to us, so if you have an event, a gardening event or plant sale that you would like to have us tell folks about, please send that to us at KBOO. You can do that online. This is a native plant sale from the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. It must be down there in the central Willamette Valley. It's their 13th annual native plant sale, Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at Bowman Farms, which is in Jervis. And you'll just have to look that up. I have the address here, but you'll never remember that. Maybe 12989 Howell Prairie Road. Sale will run from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. It says here experts will be on hand to answer shoppers' gardening and composting questions. Proceeds from the sale will go to scholarships for Marion County students studying natural resources at an Oregon college or university. Well, that's good.
Worthy event.
More information. You can go to this website, Marion, SWCD. That's the Marion Soil Water Conservation District, but that's just Marion, SWCD.net. Or you can call this number, 503-391-9927. Okay, Jim, I know we have the Home Orchard Society, one of their big whip-de-doos coming up.
Right. All fruit nuts get together soon. Sunday, March 22nd, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby. It's the place to be. If you do it like anything to do with fruit, come on out. There's going to be tables and tables with cyanwood on them. And even if you don't want to graft a tree, it's fun just to look around and see all the hundreds of varieties that you can graft someday if you want to. Plus, you get the Home Orchard Society to graft a tree on the spot for you. Take it home. You can take home your own cyanwood and root by rootstocks. Take those home and graft them yourself. It is kind of like the spring event for fruit nuts.
And sadly, I will not be here.
Oh, well.
For the first time in many years.
Really?
Yes, I am going to be in Wyoming of all places.
Not grafting trees, I suspect.
Nope, giving a bee class.
Well, that's amazing, Glenn. You're getting around.
That's right.
Well, I'll be there.
I don't know how that happened. You'll be there. Okay, good.
I'll be there. Love to see folks.
All right, yeah. Yep. Well, stop by and say, hey, I heard you're on the radio.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
All right.
Remember, that's Clackamas County Fairgrounds, Canby, Oregon, March 22nd.
It's only Sunday.
Only Sunday.
Right.
Yep.
And there's probably no horse show that's going along at the same time that now, is
there?
No,
the reason we do it on Sunday is because Saturday is the horse show, and it was so hard for the parking because there was so many people at the tack and horse event that you could hardly find a place to get in. And so we just changed the date to Sunday to make it easier for folks.
And it runs all day.
Yeah, 10 to 4.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, this is our pollinizer show, or at least part of it anyway. And we'll explain the difference between pollinizer and a pollinator. Pollinators are big these days.
Yep.
And the difference is that the pollinator is that insect or animal or wind even that moves pollen from one place to another. Sometimes it's from tree to tree or flower to flower. Sometimes it's from tree to nose. The wind, that is.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. For allergy sufferers. That's why, that's how it happens. Pollen is moved in the wind. But we're not going to be talking about that particularly today. We're going to talk about the pollinizers. That is, that the other man, because pollen is a male, zygote. Mm. Is that the right word, Jim?
Maybe.
Okay. So, for example, you may have an apple tree that will not produce fruit if you only have one apple tree and it's the only apple tree within miles. Could that be the case sometimes?
Well, it's interesting. You know, that's what the literature says, and I tell everybody that. And yet, years ago when I lived up in the mountains in Hood River, I had a Gravenstein tree and it bore fruit every year. And for the life of me, at least in the area where I could see visually, there was no other apple tree around. So, but I mean, that's
the standard.
That's the standard thing.
No, right.
Information is that apples do need another variety for pollination.
And our plant of the month will be the Gravenstein apple and other triploids. And we'll explain that in some detail so you can understand that. But, I mean, you've got me a little, my interest peaked here, Jim, in that how can a Gravenstein of all trees, which is a triploid, have apples? Because that means, according to the literature, the standard literature, you need two other types of
That's right. Of
apples within the bee's flight.
Well, you would need one to pollinate the Gravenstein.
Well, true.
And I suspect there was something wild in the forest that I just couldn't see.
Seedling apple.
But I thought it was interesting. You know, there's a lot of apple pollen around. And I think, we certainly recommend planting two different varieties for pollination, you almost likely will get fruit with just planting one tree because there's so much.
Yes.
You know.
So you're saying your recommendation is to plant two on your property?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I think it's interesting when we were talking about this show that some people get confused about that two variety thing. Like some people think, well, you get two trees, like two Graven. Mm-hmm. Well, let's not talk about Gravenstein, yeah, but let's say Liberty or, okay, or Red Delicious or something, and you plant two of those trees, then you have pollination. But basically, two Red Delicious trees are the same tree, just on different roots, and so there's no, it doesn't work.
So how? I would like to, maybe we needed a geneticist on here a little bit to talk about this, but I'm going to rely on your expertise here in that, why does it take another variety?
Yes. Well,
the so-called pollinizer.
Right. And I am not a geneticist, so we'll go with the more rough way of talking about it.
Generalist. Then.
Generalist. Flowers, an apple has a perfect flower, has both male and female parts, but the pollen of the variety is not compatible with itself, and so the fruit cannot happen. It won't pollinate. That pollen from that male part of the flower won't pollinate the female flower.
And is that a physical thing? Like the pollen just doesn't fit into the female?
No, it's just. It just doesn't work. You know, it's like it would be, I'm not sure how I could explain it in human terms, but yeah, essentially the pollen doesn't work in that same variety flower. So you need pollen from a different variety.
Because some fruits or maybe vegetables like squash, for example, they need, squash also need a pollinizer. Another type, or at least another plant in that case. Some fruit plants need pollen from their own receptive parts, the stigma and the female parts will not accept their own pollen because that's not receptive at that time when the pollen is being produced. It might be a perfect flower, that is to say it produces both pollen and has the female plant, but it won't accept it, mm-hmm, at that time. So it has to wait a week for another plant to be open.
That's interesting. There are fruiting trees like that too. But we might want to stick with apples just for a minute, just so
sure,
before we go and just realize that I don't know of a self-fertile apple. There's people who I hear talk about them, but I don't know of one that I could say this is self-fertile. You only have to plant one tree and the pollen is compatible.
Except your Graveenstein in the mountains there.
Right. Yeah, right. Right.
But that's our dilemma here, listeners. Right. Go ahead. So, right. Yes. Uh-huh.
There are fruiting plants that have, some cases are always self-fertile.
For example, pie cherries.
Pie cherries would be one.
But not sweet cherries.
But not sweet cherries, right. Some varieties are self-fertile and some are not. And that would be the case with sweet cherries. There are sweet, uh-huh, cherries that are self-fertile and the pollen from that variety flower will pollinate itself, and others that require another variety for pollination.
Now, those cherries that will pollinate itself, will the pollen from one flower itself, actual flower, pollinate the same flower?
Yes.
Doesn't need to go to another flower, but on the same tree.
It can do it,
yeah, right there and right in house.
Right, it can do both. I mean,
right. Okay.
So that's kind of the. Apples, like I said, are not self-fertile, and pears in general are not self-fertile as well. I don't know of any pear right offhand that I could say was self-fertile. I mean, they require, mm-hmm, another pollinator, and then
they need a pollinizer.
Yes, that's correct. Pollinizer. And then you have an interesting with pears, because you have Asian pears and European pears. And they will cross-pollinate each other as long as the blooms are at the same time, reasonably close, mm-hmm, to each other. Mm-hmm. In most cases, that's the case.
Pears, we generally don't talk about early blooming pears, mid and late, because they're more on a equal bloom period.
That's right.
As opposed to apples, where if you had an early blooming apple, like the Wainuchi, mm-hmm, and a late blooming one, like
Northern Spy,
one would be forming apples when the other one is just coming into, or the pollen would be available.
Right. Right. And that of course, if it's too much of a difference, then there's not that pollination. Yeah. It's not going to happen between them. But I haven't found...
So it's, I guess my point would be, so just any apple to act as a pollinizer wouldn't... You couldn't make that statement.
Right. Right. That's true.
And there's charts and things for fruit companies and online and yep. universities and whatnot that will tell you what...
Later blooming, earlier yeah, blooming, right. so forth.
Same with right. blueberries mm-hmm. in this respect.
Right.
We had a caller who asked the question about there's some trees have multiple grafts on the tree. Mm-hmm. And if those, for example, apples, and if those are all within the early to mid or mid to late bloom period, then of course they'll act as the pollinizer.
For each other, right. They'll all right. work together to produce that fruit
mm-hmm.
crop.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Whew. Yeah, it's a really interesting subject.
Yeah, and maybe we'll take our first musical break, and we've got a lot of things here to talk about on the, you know, where some fruits that cross-pollination is not essential, and yet it helps with better fruit set.
That's right.
If you do.
And I would encourage any listeners out there to have questions, call, because it is a you know, very fascinating subject.
503-231-8187. We'll take the questions. My theme today is all has to do with the wind. Even though we're not talking about wind pollination here, that just makes my point here, that fruit, the pollen is pretty heavy, relatively heavy, and pretty sticky, and it doesn't blow in the wind. So I didn't use Bob Dylan at all. That would have been too obvious. But we'll start out with J.J. Cale, along with his friend Eric Clapton, with Call Me the Breeze. Cut in Eric Clapton, but that's the way it is. Well, there'll be more coming later. Well, it's our pollinizer show here today, talking about that what plants need another variety of that same type of plant in order to produce a good crop of fruit. Well, this brings up the question, Jim, like, well, what if you don't have another pollinizer on, say, you know, apples? Will you get just zero apples? Or would they try to do it, but they'd be small and hard. And
well, usually what happens is the fruit will set a little. I mean, it'll start to set, and then it'll just fall off.
Just like regular apples, if all the blossoms don't get adequately pollinated.
Right, right. You won't get fruit. But like we were saying earlier, the chances are that in most cases you're going to find some fruit because there's so much apple pollen just out
there. Yeah, we don't need to worry about that. So another caller asked about pears. We briefly touched on this, you know, do they need another pollinizer? And yes, is the answer. The European pears and Asian pears.
That's correct.
But if they're in this, if the Asian pear is in the same bloom period as the European pear and vice versa, is that right?
Right.
They will pollinate each other. Uh-huh. Pollinize, I suppose, would be the right word there.
No, but yeah, I don't know. We could say pollinate maybe, but.
Pollinate each other?
Yeah. With the help of a bee.
Right. And Asian pears alone, do they have a wider variety or a wider period of bloom?
There are two types that I've experienced. One, the Japanese Asian pears are typically a little later than the Chinese. There's a couple of varieties, Seri and Yali, that we've grown for a long time. They bloom a little earlier, so they're a little more challenging to meet with some of the later, to have the same bloom time as the later blooming European pears.
So if one wanted to be more sure of getting pollinization, plant one each of those.
Yes, absolutely.
Because their bloom period would overlap, but it's in the early. They're both early.
That's right.
Okay, so I've got a list here. Crab apple. I can't keep thinking of The Simpsons. Mrs. Crabapple. They need another variety.
They should have another variety.
But they will cross-pollinate regular apples and vice versa?
The bloom time can be an issue with those because crabs typically bloom earlier than the standard apples. But in theory, yes.
In theory. All right. See, it's important that, you know, the blooms are, you know, if you can go out there and physically see the blooms, then it's probably compatible.
Right.
Or check the books on it.
Yep.
Whatnot.
Apples are somewhat later blooming, as you'll notice right now if you go out and you know there's a lot of ornamental crabs that will be starting to come out.
My Asian pears are starting to come out.
Yeah,
but that's typical. They're always early. All right, let's go to the phones. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. I got a question for you guys.
All right.
Several years ago, I bought this plant, chocolate vine from you guys.
Uh huh.
I planted it in. Actually, I planted two varieties of it, and it's grown fantastically. It's really taken up the fence, and it's huge. But I've never gotten those little pods that you're supposed to get. And I was wondering if I might be doing something wrong or if I could do something to encourage it, or does it just take a long time?
Well, that's a really excellent question.
How long ago was it, Tim, that you planted this, by the way?
I would say about 4 years ago.
Okay.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that plant, Akebia is what another name for it, before this show, because Akebia is unusual in some ways. It has its own peculiarities, and in fact, it has male and female flowers on the same plant. So that's just interesting, because some have a perfect flower, but the Akebia flower is not perfect.
Unlike the kiwi, which has males on one plant and females on another plant.
Different plants, right. So Akebia has male and female flowers and requires two varieties to make the pods. So you need two, and not two of the same, but two different varieties. And then you'll probably have fruit because it's pretty, it's remarkably fertile. It seems like wants to bear fruit in our situation.
So what's your situation again, Tim? Do you have two of the same plant, or do you have two different plants or two different varieties?
Well, honestly, I did plant two different varieties, but one I had planted maybe 2 years before the other, and then I went legally blind, so now I can't tell.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yes, I can't tell.
Well, so maybe you can have a neighbor or friend or somebody come and help you with that a little bit. But it does, it in our experience, when if you have two distinct varieties of Akebia, you will get fruit. I mean, it's pretty, I have a lot of fruit that comes on ours. And actually, the seeds fall on the ground eventually if we don't pick those pods. And then they'll germinate and make new plants too.
Yeah, this one is like going crazy. It's a monster. It's taking over everything.
Well, do you remember?
Yeah, but that's probably another reason it would be hard to find out if there are two there or just the one, because they're all it's so huge. And
they have usually they have different colored flowers too. The two varieties. So
okay.
Oftentimes you can tell by that.
All right, Tim, you got to get your helper.
All right, man.
Good luck with that.
That's a good question.
Yeah, excellent.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so I don't have a kiwi on my list here, but so into the pears here now that, I don't know why I said Bartlett or other blooming Asian pear, but Bartletts are pretty ubiquitous. That's a very standard pear that was planted many years ago, and if you have a old-timey tree, that's probably a Bartlett.
Right. Pretty good chance. I mean, there are other pears, but
right. So that's a good pollinizer for the neighborhood.
Uh huh.
And then probably just about any pear will, if you have a Bartlett there, could
it's going to work pretty well.
Pretty well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely mid-season bloom.
Right. And Japanese plums. This is as opposed to the European plums.
And Japanese plums are considered self-infertile, so they need another variety. So if you have
Briefly, what's the difference between the Japanese plums and the European plums?
Well, the European plums are generally, not all in all cases, but generally considered self-fertile. So a variety like Italian or Brooks, which is rather sort of popular old Oregon varieties, those should by themselves make decent crops of fruit.
And European plums in general are probably meatier?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
as opposed to juicy.
Right, and the difference would be freestone also versus clingstone in most cases. Because a European plum, like an Italian or a Brooks, the seed comes out easily, where in a Japanese plum, it doesn't. You sort of eat around it.
Okay. And another maybe distinguishing characteristic, might we consider the Japanese plums rounder?
Yes. I'm trying to think quickly if there are any Japanese plums. Well, there are a few.
Just generally. And I imagine there's some European plums that are not as elongated.
That's right. They're round. You know, the Ullens is an example of a round European plum.
Okay.
And Hollywood would be an example of a elongated Japanese plum. So they're definitely, shapes are different. But Shiro and Satsuma, Santa Rosa are round.
Okay.
Plums.
So to reiterate, the Japanese plums are generally self-fertile, considered...
Japanese are self-infertile.
Self-infertile.
Right.
And the same with European.
Europeans are generally self-fertile.
Oh, excuse me. I had that wrong then.
Right. So Europeans will pollinate themselves, where Japanese need another variety.
Like Brooks, European self-fertile.
Right.
Probably don't need another one.
Probably not. I mean, you don't need another one. Yeah. If you have another one, it'll help move more pollen around, of course.
Yeah.
But one should be enough.
Okay, very good. And cherries. This is another fruit that absolutely needs pollination or a pollinizer, but it's complicated. Go ahead. You take a stab at it.
Okay, so sweet cherries, there are self-fertile varieties that do not need another pollinizer, another variety for pollination. And there are self-infertile varieties that do require that.
Give us some names of some self-fertile cherries. And by and large, are these newer varieties?
I'm not that old to know how far back, you know, from what my information is. That Lappin's is probably one of the most popular newer varieties of cherry.
New being 30 years?
30 years, yeah.
Okay.
And it is self-fertile. Stella, or compact Stella, is also self-fertile. And
these
are some new ones. I think you had written down here, Skeena and Staccato, and some other new ones out of patented varieties out of British Columbia that are self-fertile. And then a lot of the, I think you're probably, you know, the older varieties typically would be self-infertile, although I'm trying to remember, there's one that Berlat, I believe, is self-fertile, even though it's in one of the older ones.
Okay. Well, I was getting to the point that some of, you know, you may have these old big cherry trees in the neighborhoods that, you know, might be Bings or Lamberts or Royal Anns or what else they call it, Napoleon.
Uh-huh.
Those are the old style ones, and they need pollination.
Yes.
But it's not just any other tree will do in cherries. There's different classifications of them or groups. And if they're within the same group, then they're incompatible with others. And in group three, Bing, Emperor, Francis, Lambert, Royal Anne, all of those then are incompatible with each other. So they would need another. Now, would a Lapin act as a pollinizer for a Bing?
Yes.
Even though the Lapin is self-fertile.
Right. It still has viable pollen. It's
not, right. So, that is, right.
Uh-huh.
Okay. This is some heavy stuff here.
Right. But of course, if you want to go, if you're doing a cherry and you just want to have a cherry, you know, a self-fertile one is probably the easiest way to go. Then you don't have to worry about it.
Yes, yeah. And they're delicious.
Oh,
there's,
yeah.
There's no compromise there on the mm-hmm. flavor
mm-hmm.
on those. So that's a good thing to think about. Okay, I'm ready for a break.
All right, more music.
Yeah, more music. You ready, Tammy, for this one? Yeah, this is Eddie Hinton. Just kind of learned about him in the last 4 or 5, 6 years, but and I believe he's passed on too, but this is called Old Mr. Wind. Old Mr. Wind.
He said, let's go outside and walk and talk for a while. Listen over yonder, hear those crickets tuning up the violin. It's gonna be a long, hot summer. Open up the door, let the sun shine in. I ain't seen you, have mercy, how long has it been? Oh, Mr. Wind, tell me again, what's my name? It's gonna be a long, hot summer. Take me away to Mockingbird Hill. Let me feel the thrill of your windy days and nights. I'm so glad to be here in the wind with you. I wish I could see OJ and Raccoon too. Whatever together you can do.
Eddie Hinton, it's from his album Hard Luck Guy. I'm here in the studio with Jim Gilbert of One Green World. We've got our garden stumper coming up. I'll let you know that after the garden stumper, we'll be talking more about some other fruits that don't really require cross-pollination, but fruit set and other things are enhanced when they do get more pollen, so think about that. All right, let's go to our garden stumper, and Jim will come back with that. Okay, Jim.
Okay, here we are. Are you ready? So we already mentioned Akebia as a plant that has male and female flowers on the same plant. It's not a perfect flower. They're separate flowers, male flowers and female flowers. So what I'd like to know is another example of a fruit or nut variety species that has separate male and female flowers on the same plant.
And in keeping with our topic, the
and this would
pollinizer.
Be not a tropical plant, but a temperate zone.
Yeah, they're grown around here.
Right.
And this just, the answer then is dependent, or it just brings up the point that either insects or wind is required then to move the pollen from the male flower to the female flower.
That's correct.
Even though it's on the same plant.
That's right.
Can't walk on its own. Can't migrate over there. No.
Nope. It's interesting.
And as I mentioned earlier, squash, that also has separate flowers, male flowers and female flowers on the squash plant. And mm-hmm. you'll see, and bees are very necessary there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of fascinating because then you have... you have plants that have, like we talked about earlier, like kiwis, where you have a male plant with male flowers. It doesn't mm-hmm. bear fruit, and then the female plant has only female flowers,
right.
and bears fruit. There's other examples of that. So,
okay, forgot to give out the phone number, but it didn't matter, Jim.
That's amazing.
Victoria's on the phone there.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think?
I know. I live on a farm with, thousands of them. It's called the hazelnut tree.
Yay, Victoria.
Very good.
Good.
Well, very good.
Yeah, and of course, that's the filbert is wind-pollinated, too, which is interesting.
It is.
Yeah. Although, as I told Jim, honeybees will visit them to just gather the pollen as a food source for their larvae.
Yeah, well, I let a few of my cruciferous plants go to seed over the winter, mm-hmm. and since I compost, I go out there, pretty much every other day,
yeah.
and I've seen like at least 7 different pollinators, or bees, or wasps, or other various insects on the flowers.
Yeah, that's one of my recommendations, is to let, some of those cruciferous go, broccoli, kale.
That's all I
Whatever.
Let go because they do cross-pollinate. So, So I have like, kale out there, and I have, it was originally a salad green. I just let it go.
Yeah.
And it was some kind of, I'm not even sure what it was, tell you the truth, but it's definitely in the cruciferous family.
Yeah, in general, they're good blossoms for pollinators.
Yeah, that was another reason why, because I just love to see the bees out early before all the other flowering plants.
Yeah.
The other fun thing about filberts, by the way, too, also is that the male flower is very large, the big catkin that hangs down, quite spectacular. I mean, really makes a really pretty plant, especially in late winter or even midwinter, almost like starting in January when they bloom. The female flower, on the other hand, is for those of you that want to do this, go out and take a look at your hazelnut or filbert plants, and you'll notice that the above the male catkin is some very tiny little red flowers, mm-hmm. and those are the female flower. And according to what I understand is that the male pollen lodges in that female flower, and then the actual pollination doesn't take place for a couple of months.
How interesting. Well, I'm just a tenant on an established farm, and I've talked to the farmer a few times, and boy, is he just the most devoted father. He speaks with pride and
well, good.
Great.
Care and enthusiasm, and it's just lovely to see somebody who farms and cares for their plants, and
it's great. Yeah. And it doesn't hurt that the filberts are getting a good price these days too.
Yes.
that was
put a big smile on his face last year. Harvest was a good one for him.
Great. All right. Well, way to go, Victoria.
That was due to a blight,
Yeah, he may have replanted trees.
He did, actually. Yeah. He is getting rid of his grass seed crops. And, Yeah, and then, yes, and then there were a few, about 5% of his new crop of 2-year-olds died, so he had to replant. But he has established ones as well, so.
All right.
All righty, well, thank you.
You bet, thank you. I'm hoping that in the coming months we might have some more, if the Hollywood Theater has their EcoFilm series going again, maybe we'll be able to offer up some prizes for our
fun.
Our winners there.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim.
Hey, sorry I called back twice.
That's all right.
All right. I was wondering if goji berry or sweet olive might be.
The answer?
Yeah, the answer.
Or an answer?
Yeah, goji is not. I'm not sure what sweet olive, if you're referring to just the regular olive plant?
No, it was something that was listed as sweet olive, but it had its regular name also, although it's not a true olive, and it's more like a bush.
Don't know what that would be, but... the olive itself has a perfect flower, but is when pollinated, which is interesting.
And, that is very interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So it's pollen, and there are a few self-fertile varieties of olive. Most of them are not and require another variety nearby.
Well, there's only the one, and it is producing small black berries.
Huh. Yeah, don't know what that is.
All right. Okay. Jim stumped here.
Yeah, we'll have to get the Latin name on that one if we could.
Right.
That'll
help us out then.
All right.
Okay, you bet. Okay, then let's talk about some of these plants that I mentioned that cross-pollination or a pollinizer is not needed, but your fruit is enhanced. Maybe the number of fruit, the size of the fruit, the shape of the fruit is better.
Yeah, generally the more pollen the better. So if you've got room for more than one plant, that's plant another one because you'll just get more pollen moving around. We sometimes talk about partially self-fertile, which I think is for those of us in the trade a bit of a dodge because we're trying to figure out, as soon as we don't know, we'd get fruit. We're not really certain about how the pollination works, and the literature doesn't help us a whole lot with that. But we typically will recommend planting another variety, like almonds would be an example of that. A lot of literature says they're not self-fertile, but yet we have reports of people getting almonds on trees by themselves. So we think to cover your bases, plant two.
Well, I know from the commercial beekeepers that take bees to the almonds that the almond fields do have one row every seven or eight or whatever it happens to be of another variety.
Right.
Maybe not as good of a producer. And it might be Australia or New Zealand is working on a self-fertile almond, which beekeepers may or may not necessarily want to hear that. But then the question is, what are the yields and are they as good of tasting and all those things?
Even if they're self-fertile, they still have to be pollinated. So the bees are going to have to still do the work to move the pollen around.
Well, then maybe I misspoke in that. They don't need
pollination.
Maybe they're wind pollinated or something like that. Because there was some concern about that. But that,
That's
a good point, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
That even so.
Yeah. So the, and peaches would be an example of one where there's debate again about how the varieties work together. Self-fertility is commonly accepted with peaches, but there's also you get better crops if you plant two varieties.
Can we pretty much equate peaches and nectarines as far as pollinization requirements?
Yes.
Yeah. And what about apricots? Where do they fit in? I mean, is it in the same family?
Yeah. Well, apricots are another prunus, and they're generally considered self-fertile. Mm-hmm. Which is probably a really good thing if you want to grow one here in the valley, because if you can, there aren't very many varieties that we can even hope to get apricots off of here in our area. So, you know, Puget Gold is the one that, we offer, which it came from Washington up in the north, northwest part of Washington, and has probably the best chance of making fruit here. But still, apricots are tough.
I was speaking with one of my brothers who lives in Eugene, and he's had an apricot for years, and I diagnosed that he wasn't growing an apricot, he was growing the rootstock from the apricot.
That's good.
Yeah, so he went back to the same nursery that he got at before, and he wanted the same variety. I think it was the same one, and it was a Cresswell, they called it. Have you heard of that variety? You know, it might have just been something from that neck of the woods, you know, Cresswell near
right.
Eugene.
Yeah. You know, I have heard of that, and that's an interesting piece of information. I'm going to have to check that out a little bit further, because I wonder, did he actually get apricots off of it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, before that, maybe the grafter, I've forgotten exactly now what happened, but.
I would love to hear from listeners that have an apricot tree that's.
I posed that question for. Maybe it was last year at this time, you know, if you have any. And
the phone is somewhat silent, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm sure there's somebody out there.
Well, I've talked to you, and I've talked to Vern Nelson, and talked to Jerry Schroyer, yeah. You know, all big, you know, well knowledgeable people, and no, they just don't.
I have very clear memory of when I grew up on Northeast 66th Street, near between Beach and Failing, that up on the corner on Beach was an apricot tree when I was a kid. And I drove by there a couple of years ago, and it doesn't seem to exist anymore. And, you know, I just have this memory, though, of eating apricots. But
well, in my undergraduate years at Eastern Oregon University, living in a place, and they had an apricot tree. This is in La Grande. Mm-hmm. And I just remember getting my fill of apricots. There were so many. And last year in town here, it was a good year for apricots, at least on one tree.
Yeah. Well, this year I have some hopes. We actually have flowers on our apricots, and you know, it's been such a mild, dry winter that we might get something.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. Grapes. What about grapes? Do they generally
self-fertile? Right.
And the same with figs. The figs that we grow around here anyway.
Yeah, and figs are another interesting subject, but I love to talk about, because they have their own peculiarities. It was always a good garden stumper, you know.
Yeah.
How many people have seen a fig flower? And then of course, the question is, if anybody answers yes, then we investigate that, because the fact is that the flower is inside the fruit.
Well, any time they eat it, maybe.
You could say that, but by the time you eat it, it's probably not in bloom, at least.
Well, that's true, yeah. You
know, and the interesting thing about the pollination of figs is that the varieties we grow here don't require it. And so so that's another word we could introduce called parthenocarpic, which is the ability of a plant to make fruit without pollination.
That reminds me of a bumper sticker I saw some 30 years ago that read, "If we can send a man to the moon, why not all of them?" Yeah, you don't need males for propagation. Say that word again.
Parthenocarpic.
Do I have that down here? I do.
Good.
Yes, in my handy
cheat sheet here.
Right.
Okay. So there are a few figs that do. Well, probably more than a few that do require pollination. Kalmerna is an example of one, and they grow them in Southern California and in Turkey and Greece and places. And for those, they actually will take a branch from a wild fig tree and hang it in the tree, in the Kalmerna tree. And there's a wild wasp, a very small little wasp that flies out of that wild fig and goes looking for another one to lay its eggs in, crawls in the end of the cultivated fig. But because the flowers are too long inside that fig, is too big, they can't lay their eggs in there, so they fly back out again. But in the process, they pollinate
that.
And years ago, I was checking out some of my figs versus the ones I bought in the store, dried Kalmerna figs, and the dried Kalmerna figs actually had viable seeds. The seeds were complete, but the local figs, like Desert King, the seed is empty.
Are the viable seeds more crunchy?
A little bit.
Yeah. But we don't have the wasps.
We don't have the wasp, and we don't have the Kalmerna fig,
and we don't need the
we don't need any of that.
The wasp. So
right. Move on.
Okay, we're good there. Yep. We talked about pie cherries.
Yeah,
they're self-fertile. Uh-huh. What about strawberries?
Well, that's a good question. What strawberries generally they're self-fertile. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do see insects on the blossoms.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily required then for it.
No, the insects are still there to move the pollen around.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I keep in my mind, I guess, thinking, self-fertile means, well, they don't need any pollinization, right. But of course they do.
Right, and that's parthenocarpic.
Right, the only one that we've talked about here is is the fig.
The fig.
Any right. others that come to your mind?
I've often wondered if I could use that word to describe persimmons. Asian uh-huh. persimmons,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
because I don't see much in the way of insect action on those, and they don't have male and female flowers, and they're not wid pollinated. But it's a question I don't know the total answer to that. But the Asian persimmons, they are definitely self-fertile, the ones that we grow.
So I need to add persimmons to this list.
Yes, and you can plant one Asian persimmon tree and get fruit, no problem.
Yeah.
Whew. American persimmon, on the other hand, is generally considered to be self-infertile. However, interestingly enough, we have some varieties that we brought back from Illinois, actually, from this wonderful American persimmon orchard that are bearing seedless fruit with no apparent pollination. And that's one of the other things that with a persimmon, for example, if they do get pollinated, then they will have seeds.
Hmm.
And there's a variety, kind of an interesting, people call this variety chocolate. Well, chocolate is obviously not the Japanese or Chinese name for that variety, but it's fun because the reason they call it chocolate persimmon because it has dark flesh, and the dark flesh is caused by the pollination. And if it's not pollinated, then it won't have the dark flesh.
And are both edible?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Huh.
No, it's
okay.
Really, yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
All right. Well, we'll take about a 45-second break here with our last tune having to do with the wind. This is from the Henry Paul Band called Wood Wind. You wouldn't think that song would come from one of the guitarists from the group The Outlaws, but it did, Henry Paul. Tammy brought up, our ace engineer brought up a question about, what about seeds? She asked specifically about persimmon. If you get a persimmon from the store, can you plant the seed? Well, what about that? What about apple seeds, cherry pits, peach pits?
Well, that's how they make more of themselves, isn't it? And so you can plant all those seeds and you can get plants from them. The disadvantage is, well, in general, the rule is with horticultural crops, they're typically not propagated by seed. They're propagated by grafting, cuttings, budding, because what you're doing is you want to vegetatively propagate that same variety and get the identical fruit. In the case of a Bing cherry, you want more Bing cherries. If you plant the seed of a Bing cherry, who knows what you're going to get? You could.
It might be something earth-shattering.
It could be something less than that.
It's probably going to be something less
than that. Probably
less
than
that. And for home gardeners, why let Jim and his ilk experiment with those things where they can plant thousands of them and
select for one that's good.
And then
the other disadvantage is it takes a lot longer for them to come into bearing because that's juvenile wood and it takes several years for it to become mature and be able to start bearing fruit.
And it would probably be a big tree.
And it would be a big tree.
Because it's not grafted onto
any kind of dwarfing rootstock or anything. But there's nothing, you know, that's not it's in itself a necessary disadvantage if you've got a lot of room. I mean, you can make a nice tree out of it. But the time of coming into bearing, I think, is pretty, is especially as you get somebody my age. You know,
well, that's
we
good.
We will talk about that. But the, yeah.
Okay. I have overlooked this, but Tammy gave me another note here with another possible answer to the stumper. Could pine nuts be an answer?
That's a really good question. You know, well, if somebody else might know that, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, how pine trees do it. I'm trying to remember, you know, related to all of the different conifers, do they have separate male and female flowers?
Birds do it.
Is there an answer out there, listeners?
Do pine nuts do it? Right.
Good question.
Yeah.
I'll check that out.
All right. Well, I've just got a few minutes left here. I want to mention in the vegetable garden, time to start those warm season crops. Well, not all of them yet, but tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, time to get those going. It's not too late to start onions, the brassicas, lettuce. Those lettuce and the brassicas could almost be planted outside now since it's forecast to be pretty mild.
Mm-hmm.
But not the warm tomatoes and peppers and eggplants, but get those going now, and including the onions. Mine's been going since, well, I've had them going for 10 days or so, but I could have even planted them sooner. The idea is that we want to get those as big as possible, well, much as green as possible, but before we transplant them out mid-April or so. And I'd wait on the squash, cucumbers and things like that. You can plant those later this month or early in April. But gosh, with this weather, I don't know. Maybe you could get away with it.
You know, there could be a surprise.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I would say, you know, I was talking to somebody else about that recently and said, like, well, you know, planting outdoors probably should wait till mid to late April at least, don't you think?
Yeah. Peas, though, can go in now.
Yes, peas, absolutely.
And I've done that and covered them up with my panes of glass. So they're nice and toasty underneath there, that's for sure. Of course, even without the glass this year, some of that would be okay.
There's an interesting discussion I was having with a friend the last couple of days about black plastic versus clear plastic, and your glass example brings that up to me. So if you put a piece of clear glass down on soil, the soil is going to warm up just like air would in a greenhouse. Heat goes through the glass and the heat is trapped from coming back out again.
Right.
With black plastic, it's a different phenomena. The black plastic or something black on the soil will absorb the heat and transfer it to the surface of the soil underneath that object. And so in the summertime, if you had clear plastic or glass on the soil, it would get very hot underneath and would kill things.
Oh, yeah.
It would kill stuff because it would get so hot.
And sometimes we do that on purpose.
Yes, like for weeds. And
yeah, solarization.
Solarization, right.
Yeah, and I'm using glass, well, for one, because I have it, and two, I can see what's going on, and three, even if they when they germinate, they'll still grow because they see light. They see the light.
That's right. And black plastic would not work for that.
Right. And once the seed is germinated and I can see it poking up, then I take the glass off.
Mm-hmm.
And the glass has done its job, created heat, so the seed will germinate.
The other thing about the glass, however, is also the little weed seeds that are there can also have a little party too, right? And get going.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't have too many of those, though.
I'm sure after all the years you've worked that soil.
That's right. Okay, well, that's it on pollinizers. So the difference between a pollinizer and a pollinator. The pollinator is like the terminator. It's a guy. It's a person. It's a thing. It's the insect that transfers the pollen. But the pollinizer supplies that pollen.
And I would say, you know, if any listeners out there have questions, we can revisit this too, it seems like. And I'll try to find out about pines.
That's okay.
A good one.
Great.
Check out.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Glenn.
We'll be back in the April 8th, I believe it is, 4 weeks from today.
Yeah, and I encourage people to come to the Spring Propagation Fair. March 22nd, Sunday, March 22nd.
And my bee school in Wyoming is sold out, so you can't go there.
Oh, darn.
All right. Thanks, Tammy. You're the best. We'll be back. Be well. Thanks for listening.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Also by Deacom Street Doorway. It's a Linton feed and seed store offering essentials for farm life in the city, including animal feeds, plants from local farms and nurseries, and seed potatoes, onion sets, and chicks. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 to sundown at Northeast Deacom and 8th. DeacomStreetDoorway.com. Thanks for tuning in to KABU Today. That's it for public affairs programming. Stay tuned for Jazz Lives following the KABU Noon News. It's just about noon on KBOO Portland. $60,000 I watch his dump of trucks to New York's Palm Lakes in the sea.
This is KABU Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, Carrie Russell, the Oregon woman being detained by Japanese authorities for possession of illegal amphetamines, was released from jail Tuesday after 18 days in detention. Russell's case received international attention because of the improbability of an American being incarcerated for having a medication routinely prescribed by U.S. doctors for attention deficit disorder. Japanese laws concerning amphetamines are very strict.
As many communities look for long-term solutions to severe drought conditions in California, 13 desalination projects are under consideration along the coast. The cost of desalinized water has come down